You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
In dreams he came.
And that was REM, but Stand. And we're here on the 37th edition of the Stone Tapes. And in the studio, we've got David J. Howe.
I'm standing here.
And our producer, Alex Levchuk.
Hello.
We're letting him speak this week.
Yes.
And on the phone, joining us today, for all the way from the lovely Wales, is Robin Pierce. Hi, Robin.
Hi, I'm also standing.
You're all standing. We're all standing.
In respect to what exactly?
I said to the lovely Sam just before we started that I started off this month choosing the music on the basis that it was hard to sing in karaoke because they all had lots of words. So we'll see how that goes and see how the sing-alongs go as people there.
Hey, hang on a second.
Try to join us.
I've reread my contract with a Stone Tape.
This is the special karaoke edition. No, we're not going to do that.
Don't worry, you're safe.
You're safe.
After that.
No one wants to hear me singing.
And before we
could do a crooning duet, though, couldn't we?
We could do. We could do.
That could be original. So, today, David, are you going to tell
us
about in this month?
We've got a few anniversaries this month, as always. And so we're going to kick off 20 years ago this month. 20 years. A particular format was released into the UK market for the first time. I think you've got one or two of these things on your in your office, haven't you, Robin?
Yes, DV, I have actually wallpapered my office with DVDs.
So yes. The DVD is 20 years old this month. 20 years. And it says, according to this thing anyway, among the first set of titles released on the new format was a film called Jumanji.
Oh, really?
Which I didn't realise.
I didn't realise that.
So that original Jumanji was one of the earliest DVDs released in the UK.
Wow.
There you go, fascinating.
You know, I thought that DVDs would never catch on.
No.
And I used to extol the mantra that real men watch VHS.
Ooh, not Betamax then.
I think we were resistant to it for a while because, you know, again, you've got a video player and then you think, well, it's perfectly good. Mm. And now I've got to go and buy a DVD player. And they were very expensive when they first
shiny discs, yes. I remember that.
And now you can get one for like £15 in the supermarket.
That was our first anniversary. So the second anniversary, 44 years ago, this month, a certain actor left Doctor Who. Who do you think that might be?
I have to work this one out.
Work it out.
I bet you know, Robin.
we've got a little bit of music. That's not Doctor Who, but that's fine. Sorry. It was John Pertwee. John Pertwee left Doctor Who 44 years ago in the final episode of Planet of the Spiders.
Wow.
That's quite amazing, isn't it? 44 years ago. Incredible. My next anniversary, 90 years ago. 90 years ago, John Logie Baird demonstrated the world's first colour television transmission.
90 years, really?
90 years ago, in 1928.
Well, I didn't realise we had colour in 1928. That's amazing.
Well, we didn't. John Logie Baird did.
Well, he did. But that was the first.
Yeah.
First time.
Because he invented television, didn't he? And I always wondered how he knew he'd done it, because obviously, you know, nobody was transmitting any pictures at that time, so how did he know it worked? It's like the guy, Bell, who invented the telephone. How did he know he'd done it? Because there wasn't anyone else who had one.
He couldn't ring anybody.
So he sat there looking at it, thinking, when am I going to get a call?
Well, he must have had two. Yeah. You know, otherwise it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, the phone probably rang and somebody said, excuse me, have you had an accident recently? Or we've had a report that your computer's not working. Or something like that. That's probably what happened.
And then he said, what's a computer?
So that was 90 years ago. Yeah, colour television.
That's shocking.
That's wow, isn't it? And then my final anniversary. So, Robin, I don't know if you're going to know this one.
Okay.
How many years ago do you think the Globe Theatre in London burnt to the ground?
Oh, it's got to be quite a few hundred.
Oh, well, I was a child.
You were a young man. You were a young man just starting out, yes. The Globe Theatre in London, England, it burnt to the ground. This was, I'll tell you, 405 years ago.
Wow.
In the year 1613.
I thought it was the 1600s, but I couldn't possibly go any nearer than that.
But isn't that a bit wow? 1613.
Yeah, I have one anniversary to share with you.
Oh, yes, Robin.
Oh, good,
yes.
Good.
Awesome.
43 years ago today, Jaws was released in the USA.
Really?
Wow.
Yep.
Really? And nobody went swimming for the next 5 years.
You know, I still haven't learned to swim.
I
can't. You want to kill me? Throw me in the water. It'll work.
So whenever you go near the water in your
that
head...
That was not an advisory, by the way.
Yeah, so whenever you go near the water in your head, do you hear... Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, I won't even take a bath, mate. Showers only for me.
Very wise, very wise. So those are our anniversaries. There are our anniversaries for this month.
That's brilliant.
Music, colour, a little driven. You look funny when you're 50. monsters came and flush him out. Galen's laying on the ground, new identity must be found. On the left and for a while, insanity, bohemian style. Dressed up in Red Riding Hood, bad habit, taking life, a calling card, a six-inch knife, ran off really fast, mumbled something about the past, best sex I've ever seen, as if each moment was the last, drops of blood, color slide, funeral for his bride, but it's him who's really dead, gets to take the funeral ride.
Robin, what have you been looking at this month, and what are you going to review for us?
Well, I have been to see Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom.
Wow.
And I liked it the first time, 3D. As you may or may not know, I'm quite ambivalent about the whole 3D process. It's a needless distraction in my book. Went to see it in 2D yesterday, I'm sorry, and I found it to be a far better film than I thought at the first go.
Oh. Is that because the 3D was distracting, or...?
No, I just don't like 3D much. It really only worked in this film when people were pointing guns at the camera. That's the only time I was really aware of it. Mm. Otherwise, it's like watching a dark film with sunglasses.
I'm not into 3D either.
No, we're not fans.
Mm. I have to say, I like films that were made in 3D when you see them in 2D... because the 3D approach seems to make the director be a bit more imaginative in the way they frame all their shots.
Absolutely. I found this to be true. I had a Blu-ray given me of Friday the 13th, Part 3, in the original red and blue 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And the depth of vision in that, because they used a Lumacrane camera, was just astounding. Mm. Far better than anything I've seen in the cinema lately.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, Jurassic World.
Jurassic World.
So this is not Jurassic Park.
It follows on from Jurassic World. It's a few years later. The island has been abandoned. Isla Nublar, which was the site of the original Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember in the last film, they built a huge theme park there.
They did.
And everything went horribly wrong. The island has now become... Well, it's been abandoned, really. And it's also volcanic, and that volcano is about to blow. There are two things that the childlike part of me loves to see in films, though not in real life. One is I like tidal waves in films. You can't beat a good tidal wave. And if I can't have a tidal wave, I like a good volcanic eruption. And this one is a killer in more ways than one. So they bring back Bryce Dallas Howard, and they bring back Chris Pratt for a, inverted commas, rescue mission to save as many of these species as they can. No spoilers here, because we know all of this from the trailers.
Right.
but of course, as always, there is a nefarious scheme under the table that our heroes don't know about. And from that part on, it plays a little bit like The Lost World, where we're bringing animals from where they have been to where they clearly do not belong. See, I'm trying to do this as spoiler-free as possible. And chaos ensues.
Mm.
Chaos actually ensues when some of these animals are being auctioned off to the highest bidder, which include countries that want to use them for terrorism as weapons. You know, you can actually weaponize a T-Rex, I suppose.
So it's illegal to have weapons of mass destruction, but it's not illegal to have a small army of T-Rexes.
Indeed.
Fantastic.
Trained T-Rexes,
trained T-Rexes, yes.
You know, or you can even have, I suppose, pterodactyls dropping bombs.
You could.
That's true.
You can gene-splice velociraptors with other tension-building creatures.
Indeed. Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to veer away from that one now.
Yes.
So
it all sounds like it's getting a little bit silly.
No, actually...
Like a Monty Python sketch.
It starts off as a Jurassic Park movie,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes a horror movie with dinosaurs in a mansion, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of works. The dinosaurs then get involved in the question of, if they're man-made, if we created them, are they actually animals with a right to survive and a right for life? Or are they merely a commodity that can be written off if needed?
So there's a sort of subtext.
Obviously, there is a very moral question.
Yeah.
And the ending of the film, that's where the sequel is going. The big clue is actually in the title. And as long as they don't go the same route as Jurassic Park 3, we are onto a winner already, because director Colin Trevorrow from Jurassic World is coming back to direct the third. This is the least Spielbergian of all of them. It's got emotion, but it doesn't have the, you know, Spielberg warm fuzzies that everything apart from Schindler's List had.
Interesting.
I'm trying to sound both mysterious and alluring here. About the film, not myself.
Well, I'm sure you manage both there, actually.
Only our listener knows for sure.
Yes.
What sort of rating would you give this, then?
First off, I was going to give it a 7. But having seen it yesterday and pondered its depth, it's an 8. It's definitely an 8. It's not an 8.5, but it's definitely an 8.
Right, good. That's excellent.
Interesting.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me. Cocked your head to the side and said I'm angry. 5 days since you laughed at me, saying get back together, come back and see me. 3 days since the living room, I realized it's all my fault, but couldn't tell you. Yesterday, you'd forgiven me, but it'll still be 2 days till I say I'm sorry.
Hold it now, I'll watch the hood wink. Does it make you stop, think? You'll think you're looking at Aquaman. Summon fish to the dish, although I like the shallot swiss, I like the sushi, cause it's never touched a frying pan. Hot like wasabi when I bust rhymes, speak like Leanne rhymes, because I'm all about value. Bird campers got the mad hits, you try to match wits, you try to hold me but I bust through. Gonna make a break and take a fake, I like a sink and ache and shake, I like vanilla, it's the finest of the flavors. Gonna see the show cause then you'll know the vertigo is gonna go, cause it's so dangerous, you'll have to sign a waiver. Can I help it if I think you're funny when you're mad? Trying hard not to smile though I feel bad. I'm the kind of guy who laughs at a funeral, can't understand what I mean, well you soon will. I have a tendency to wear my mind on my sleeve.
stranger. It's been 1 week since you looked at me, threw your arms in the air and said you're crazy. 5 days since you tackled me, I still got the rough burns on both my knees. It's been 3 days since the afternoon, you realize it's not my fault, not a moment too soon. Yesterday you've forgiven me, and now I'll sit back and wait till you say you're sorry. Chinese chicken, you have a drumstick and your brain stops sticking. Watching X-Files with no lights on, with all our maisons. I hope the smoking man's in this while my kerosene port, I'm getting frantic. Like Sting and Pantrick, like Snickers guaranteed to satisfy. Like Kurosawa, I make mad films. Okay, I don't make films, but if I did, they'd have a samurai. Gonna get a set of better clubs, gonna find the kind with tiny dumps, so my irons are always flying off the backswing. Gonna get into my Sailor Moon, cause the cartoon has got the boom anime babes that make me think the wrong thing. How can I help it if I think you're funny when you're mad? Trying hard not to smile, but won't feel bad. I'm the kind of guy who laughs at a funeral. Can't understand what I mean, you soon will. I have a tendency to wear my mind on my sleeve. I have a history of losing my shirt. It's been 1 week since you looked at me, dropped your eyes to the sides and said I'm sorry. 5 days since I laughed at you and said you just did just what I thought you were gonna do. 3 days since the living room, we realized we're both to blame, but what did we do? Yesterday you just smiled at me, cause it'll still be 2 days till we say we're sorry. It'll still be 2 days till we say we're sorry.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
And that was Bare Naked Ladies, 1 week.
Fantastic song.
I like that song.
I love that song.
I do like that. And we've said goodbye to Robin, and joining us now is Patricia H. Ash. Hello, Patricia.
Hello.
Hello, Patricia.
Hi, I'm great. Yes. Run a bunch of errands, because I'm going to foster kittens.
You're going to foster kittens.
Oh, I like that.
Yes. Is that a place south of Texas, though?
I think it must be. I've never heard of foster kittens, but they have strange name places in Texas.
No, I'm not. I'm going to have kittens in my house and teach them how to like people.
Oh, lovely.
So how many are you getting?
I don't know yet. I was looking at one, and then she got adopted. Now I've got some emails and about a few others.
Yeah, see, it all starts with one, Patricia.
I can't
wait. And then you have two, and then you have four.
And then you become crazy cat lady.
And then you become crazy cat lady.
That's fine. I'm down with that.
I'm already a crazy cat lady. How much worse could it get?
True that.
There
True.
You go.
Anyway, what have you been reading this month?
Oh, I have been reading a fantastic book. It's called The Diviners. And it's the first book in the series, and that's the best thing about it. Because there's more, and they're all just as good. And the author is called Lyda Bray.
Right.
B-R-A-Y. And it's fantastic. It's like, it's the 1920s, and then there are people with superpowers that are just discovering their superpowers, and in the diviners, they're just discovering their superpowers, and meeting each other, and figuring out stuff, and then there's this government organization, which is either evil or good, or maybe neither, or both, who knows? And perhaps they're competing government organizations. And then there's also ghosts and a series of murders and a whole mystery. Oh, my gosh, it's fantastic. And it's all 1920s, so there's flappers and jazz, and it's wonderful.
I'm liking the sound of that.
So she creates a good milieu.
Hmm.
Oh, yes. She's done her research. It's very much the 20s, very much that the feel of that era.
Mm-hmm.
And I would give this book 11 out of 10.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow.
11 out of 10? That's quite exceptional.
So 11.
Is this a recent book as far as you know?
I think it came out within the last few years.
Right.
I know that the third book was just out last October.
Okay. So you can basically binge on it immediately.
Oh, yes. I believe it's going to be a four-book series, and I don't know the release date for the fourth one yet, so you can binge a lot and then wait.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
So what's the basic plot doing then? Are we following a particular character through this this universe?
Well, a few different characters.
Right.
A few different characters, and they've got parallel stories, and then they kind of meet up, and then they realize what each other can do, and they get... Hello?
Wow.
Mm. So, so it sounds a little bit Heroes-y.
A bit, yeah. I would describe it as maybe a little bit X-Men-y.
Yeah, but 1920s but set. So.
In the 20s.
Yeah.
With ghosts.
Wow.
It's fantastic.
Wow.
I'm liking the sound of that. That sounds really cool.
Mm.
Very different as well.
So it's the Diviners by Libba
Bray. Yes, the Diviners.
That's fantastic. Now, something we've been discussing here are dinosaurs and dinosaur films. And Robin has just been talking all about the new Jurassic World film. I wonder, what was the first dinosaur film that you saw?
I think the first dinosaur film I saw was The Land Before Time.
Oh, yes.
Because Jurassic Park came out when I was 6 and Mom wouldn't let me see it.
Yeah.
And I was very into dinosaurs when I was 6, so that was a problem.
Right. So The Land Before Time, was that a Hammer one? I'm losing track. No.
I think was that Chuck... I can't think of his name, but...
Anyway, that one. What was the
Don
first...
Don Bluth.
What was the first one you remember seeing?
I think it was like a million years BC, I think, with Raquel Welch in it. I'm well showing my age now.
I think that probably was
Everybody
one
was walking around going, ugh. No, yeah, there wasn't any actual dialogue in it. They were all grunting and making ugh sounds.
It was authentic cave person speak.
It was authentic cave person speak. I suspect my earliest experience of dinosaurs was strangely the Doctor Who, the John Pertwee... the dinosaur invasion of the dinosaurs.
Why am I not surprised?
Where they were very, very rubber. And
those were the days.
Someone apparently told the production office that they could do dinosaurs really convincingly, and they lied.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no!
But it's a great fun story. I do like that one. I was also remembering the original Jurassic Park.
Oh,
so
I love it.
Do you say
film.
You weren't allowed to see that one? Patricia.
No, because I was 6 when it came out, and I said, can I read the novel instead? Because I knew that Mom had it, and she didn't think I could do it. I did it.
Yeah.
You probably shouldn't have let me read the novel either.
Because I remember watching Jurassic Park when it came out. Do you remember Jurassic Park?
I do, I love it.
It was pretty groundbreaking, as I recall, because the effects were kind of a quality that hadn't really been seen before.
Yeah, I just love the whole scientific backstory of it all as well.
Right.
The creation of being able to recreate the dinosaurs like that,
yes,
and be able to clone them.
Yes,
I thought it was wonderful. That I loved
it. And it had some most amazing moments in it. I mean, I still remember when the T-Rex first appears. You know, and the first you see is little glass of water and sort of the dimpling on the top.
That's right.
Going as the footsteps.
And those evil
come.
Little dinosaurs that eat people and they'll gang up on you.
Oh, the velociraptors!
That's right.
I loved those.
I didn't like the one that spat the poison.
The
acid.
Nasty.
The one
nasty.
With the wing.
The Dilophosaurus.
Yes.
Whatever it's called. Oh, you know all the names,
you
Patricia.
I said I was into dinosaurs. I was way into dinosaurs.
Your specialist subject.
Great stuff.
And we all felt sorry for the Stegosaurus when it got ill and died.
Aww.
Yeah.
Was it a Stegosaurus? Something like that. Yeah.
It was a Triceratops, I think.
Was it a Triceratops?
I think it was, yes.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's
and
fantastic.
In the book they explained what it was. It was eating a poisonous plant.
Right.
And it was okay after.
Yes. Yes. That's amazing, isn't it? Now, what do you make of these current theories, then, Patricia, that dinosaurs might have had feathers and been all multicoloured rather
what?
Than just sort of grey and brown, as people traditionally have said?
I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
That, you know, as Dr. Grant said in Jurassic Park, dinosaurs evolved into birds.
Yes.
Mm.
And
lizards today, things like chameleons and stuff, are all different colours and... And of course,
very colourful.
And I don't think we actually know, because the fossil record doesn't maintain colour.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't know.
So we don't know. I find that quite fascinating, that they could have all been like chameleonic, you know, and you wouldn't have said, like Predator or something, you know, you wouldn't see them until they were on top of you.
Yeah, ooh.
kind of thing. See, there's a thought. See, I should be writing these Jurassic films. You know, I'd have chameleonic dinosaurs that you couldn't see.
It might well go there.
Attacking cities or something, you know. Let's do some of that. That'd be fun. So what do you think? What's your favourite then, Sam? Do you have a favourite dinosaur? You must have a favourite dinosaur.
I like the pterodactyls.
You like pterodactyls?
Yeah, I do, because they can fly. They're amazing.
Do you have a favourite dinosaur, Alex?
Triceratops. Or Deuthynchosaurus.
Deuthynchosaurus, yes. Yes. Patricia?
Oh, gosh. I think the velociraptors, actually.
Yeah?
I mean, like the historical velociraptors, which were about the size of a German shepherd. Oh, and right. Apparently covered in feathers.
Oh.
Wow.
Those are cool.
You see, now, I always used to think I liked Tyrannosaurus Rex. But then I realised that the dinosaur that I actually liked, I think it's called an Ankylosaurus.
Right. Oh, the one with the big club on its tail?
Oh, is that an Ankylosaurus? I used to like, I like the Triceratops. Yeah. I liked the one with the big club on its tail, yeah. And that was cool. And the T-Rex always used to think, well, you're hopeless. You've got such puny little arms.
Yes, I don't get that.
You never catch anything, you know. This is ridiculous. How are you even going to open the door?
How can it even get itself off the floor if it falls over?
I just couldn't quite understand that one. So there you go. Anyway. Dinosaurs.
And that's all we've got.
I think we might need a psychiatrist.
I think we might.
The dinosaur has eaten the radio machine.
Has
Don't
it?
Worry, I oh, shall no. actually apply my Ian Malcolm technique to actually sort this whole thing through and work the process. Suddenly you think, what's happening here? But, you know, fortunately, we can actually call on the joys of Ian Malcolm and Ellie Sattler. By the way, just to point out, although there was lots of conviction there behind Patricia's line that Dr. Sattler said, Ellie Sattler is indeed a made-up scientist. She's not a real person.
Really?
Just thinking, yeah,
oh,
no,
you
just
sure?
I'm sorry to break that whole thing through you, but it's
what I thought we were talking fact about dinosaurs.
You see, I thought these Jurassic films were like documents.
Drama documentaries.
That they'd actually done this.
David,
you know.
David, you need that psychiatrist.
I do.
Mr. Kirk, Dexter's in school.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public school system.
Mr. Kirk, I'm as upset as you to learn Dexter's truancy, but surely expulsion is not the answer.
I'm afraid expulsion is the only answer. It is the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane.
That boy needs therapy.
Psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Purely psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Lying down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Pranikazoo, let's have it, you. Now when I count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
Avalanche is above, business continues below.
Did I ever tell you the story about
cowboys
and midgets
and the Indians
and what frontier psychiatrist?
I felt strangely hypnotized.
I was in another world, the world of
20,000 girls
and Bill and rectangles.
Two an optometrist,
a man with a golden eyeball,
and tighten your buttocks,
pour juice on your chin.
I promised my girlfriend I'd get
the violin.
Frontier psychiatry. That boy needs therapy.
Psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Purely psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Lying down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Granny Gazoo, let's have it, you. And when I count three,
that boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheet.
And he also made false teeth.
Of anything that talks other than a person?
A bird?
Yeah. Sometimes a parrot talks.
We said goodbye to Patricia H. Ash.
And the horse.
Yep, she rode off there.
She did.
And, of course, we've got joining us now Joshua Lou Friedman. Not heard from you for ages, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. I'm back. Hi.
Yay,
he's
you're back.
Back.
We missed you.
Yay.
I think a round of applause.
Yeah. There we go. Fantastic.
Oh, you're too kind.
Welcome
Hello.
Back.
Hi. Hi, Josh. How are you keeping? Is LA nice and warm? Is it behaving for you today?
It is, actually. It's quite nice. It did rain over the weekend, but now we're back with nice and beautiful sunshine.
And I know you've been very, very busy, so I'm pleased.
Yes.
I'm pleased you found time to give us a review of.
And yet you've been busy in other ways as well, though, because you have been busy in a literary sense, we understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I finally, I've been published recently. We have a book that now available on Amazon. I'm assuming that goes the same for Amazon UK.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah, it's a book called My Favorite Horror Movie. And what it is it's a group of horror professionals in the horror film industry. We're invited, a lot of the prolific ones, thankfully I was included. We're invited to contribute essays. 48 essays from 48 horror professionals kind of giving their take on their favorite horror film and what it meant to them and how it shaped their careers.
Wow.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I was very lucky enough to be invited to contribute.
Presumably it covers horror films from the whole spectrum. So there'll be stuff from way back, 50s, 60s, etc. So we're not just talking current films.
That is very true. And there is some double dipping, I know.
Oh.
A couple people, more than one people, chose the original Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween.
Wow.
Yes.
I chose An American Werewolf in London.
So that was my favorite film.
I was lucky enough to, not only to be invited, but contribute that film as my title, because it did shape my life in many perspectives. So, yeah, it was, I was very lucky enough. Mm. We had a book signing in an official bookstore, and it was really nice. So
fantastic.
All 48 of us crammed in one very small bookstore in Kissimmee, California to do a signing, but...
Well done. Very proud of you.
Yeah. I remember seeing American Werewolf in London when that first came out and was absolutely blown away. Not only because John Landis had made an incredible film, but also, of course, just the quality of those effects.
That was amazing.
Were just incredible. It's Rick Baker, was it? Or was it Rob Bottin? I've lost me.
It was Rick Baker.
It was Rick Baker.
It was the first special.
Yeah.
It was the first Oscar for special effects makeup.
Absolutely.
It's quite groundbreaking.
Yeah, and that initial transformation done, you know, in the middle of a sitting room in full daylight with no cuts. Well, no obvious cuts anyway. Absolutely amazing, you know. I've never seen anything like it before.
It was superb.
It's a very interesting book. Not because there was an assignment we were all given to not only discuss. It's very important that we were all given the assignment that we discuss how it shaped our lives. So it's not like you're not reading a book where everyone's talking about the narrative. It's not like here's what happens here and here and here.
No, it's not a synopsis of the films. No, it's
Yeah, it's all personal experiences and how it helped build our careers, so to speak. It's a very interesting perspective. And I believe on Amazon Kindle in our first 2 weeks of release, we were number one.
Wow,
on Amazon That's Kindle, amazing. Which is very exciting. We were number one on a bestseller list. So that was great. So So it's out there, easy to find. My favorite horror film. Look it up, and
I think we're going to have to get a copy of that. And when we see you, hopefully in a few weeks.
Oh, by all means.
Next time we see you, we'll get you to put your mark on it. Yeah. Fantastic, fantastic.
So, I believe you're going to review The Quiet Ones for us today.
A Quiet Place,
The Quiet Place, right.
Earlier by Robin, but that was, as far as a film that's like, you know, that's come out this year that had an effect. And again, a group of us in the horror community got together, like a lot of snobbish directors too that are hard to win over. Got together to go see this on opening night, and it really blew everybody away. Not only the respect that it's a great horror film, you have to take it in the perspective that we are right now living in a world where some of the greatest horror films that are coming out are brought to us from left field by comedians that have come out of nowhere and are giving us some of the best horror material out there, like. You know, Jordan Peele did Get Out and won the Academy Award for his best screenplay. You know, no one saw that coming. John Krasinski, who wrote this film and started it, of course, with his wife, Emily Blunt, is, you know, a comedian from The Office. No one saw that coming. And, of course, the new Halloween film coming out is written by Danny McBride, the comedian from Eastbound and Down. So, it's like, where did this happen that all these great horror films are coming from comedians that have turned out to be some of the best horror writers out there for now.
Wow, how exciting. Yeah, exciting. I do want to see this film. I've been, ever since Robin reviewed it, because it sounds really, really, really intriguing.
I'm going to back it up. And I think the best way to review this film, I'm giving a completely spoiler-free review, outside of the fact that, you know, it's known that the premise of the film is obviously, look, you have to be quiet. These are creatures that are hunting you because they're listening for any sound. They hunt you by sound. So they've really taken that premise and did something truly magical, and it's the best way to review the film, and that's by, I've never been into a film where, because the narrative is so quiet, these characters have to stay quiet to stay alive, where it is so, the tension is so wound tight. I've never been in a film where you're in a theater where everyone was all of a sudden, the tension's there, and you're very careful about, you catch yourself how careful you are about eating your popcorn.
slurping on your drink.
Exactly. Like, you're careful, like, oh, God, I can't crunch too loud. And then, and your soda, the bottom of your soda, that little noise it makes when it hits the bottom, you're very careful. And God forbid your cell phone should go off in the middle of this theater, because the entire theater would be, ew! I've never been in a situation as a theater-going experience, which is why I say, try to go see it in a theater with a packed audience, because that tension level was there.
Wow.
And I've never had that experience. I was careful about eating my own, like, popcorn, and everyone felt that way.
That
really delivers. So it's that good. It's
that's
really
interesting.
That good. Yeah.
I, so, what sort of rating would you give it out of 10 then, Josh?
Oh, easily. It's easily a 10 out of 10. That's why I picked it. And it's been out a few months, a month or two now, and it still resonates on going against these big, you know, tentpole blockbusters, these giant films like Infinity War and everything, that it still has emerged to be the grabber of all of them. And I understand that's true of Hereditary, which I haven't seen yet, but I think we're living in a good time of solid horror films that are just, you know, based on their own merits, based on the writing, and not the level of star power or special effects. This is all in the writing. It's all on the stage.
Now, stay with us, Josh, while we hear a little bit of Murray and One Night in Bangkok.
Murray Head.
My home hit.
Watching the game, controlling it. I don't see you guys rating the kind of mate I'm contemplating. I'd let you watch, I would invite you, but the queens we use would not excite you. So you better go back to your bars, your temples, your massage parlors.
One night in Bangkok, in the world's toughest star. The bars are temples, but the pearls ain't free. Ecstasy.
we're back with David, Film of the Month.
Film of the Month, yes, indeed.
And hopefully you'll be able to comment on this, Josh.
Indeed, absolutely, Josh. So what I've decided to choose this time is something completely nothing to do with dinosaurs. There was a temptation to sort of try and go back and do Gorgo or something like that, but I thought, no. We're going to do a film that's called Beyond Skyline, which is a new science fiction film. It's available on Netflix, and other streaming services are, of course, available. There was an original film called Skyline, I think it was just called
Skyline.
That's
right, I remember.
Which was quite enjoyable. Yeah. And so this is a sequel, 2017 film, directed by Liam O'Donnell. And it stars Frank Grillo, Bojana Novakovic, Iko Uwais, Callan Mulvey, Yehan Ruian. Fantastic names. But the one that I recognised was Antonio Fargas, who's Huggy Bear off of Starsky and Hutch.
Yes.
And I thought that was just awesome, seeing Huggy Bear in this film.
He plays a blind homeless man.
He plays a blind homeless man called Sarge. And he's great. I thought he was brilliant in this film.
He was really good value.
So the idea of the film is basically it's a sequel to the original film where these aliens came and invaded Earth and generally cause a lot of ruckus. So in this film, the aliens are kind of back again. The effects, I think, are utterly brilliant. The aliens sort of have biomechanical, robotic kind of things with lots of tentacles, which kind of do stuff for them. I thought the design was a little bit like that Will Smith film that I said.
iRobot.
No, Independence Day. Thank
yes,
you, Josh.
Yep.
Couldn't think of the name of the film. Independence Day was a little bit, the design was like that. But these things are great, and they kind of starts off with a blue light that makes all the humans who see it kind of turn into wide-eyed zombies who then walk into the light and get sucked up into the ship. The aliens then take their brains and put their brains into these biomechanical robots to power them. And it's all kind of, it's this great mixture of sort of sci-fi horror that's going on. I really liked it. The first half of the film, I actually think is slightly better than the second half. There's a great setup where Frank Grillo's playing a police detective who kind of helps some people that are trapped in the underground subway system by when the spaceships arrive and stuff like this. And then they're kind of attacked in this subway system and they try and get away from them. And Mark Corley is the name of the character, trying to find his son. And they all end up on this spaceship. But his son's brain's been put into one of these robot things, but manages to somehow retain its humanity towards the end of the film. There's stuff in there as well about a girl who's pregnant and has a baby really, really early, but the baby kind of grows at an alarming rate. And I think we commented when we were watching it that this always seems to happen.
Yes.
You know,
they always
you get involved with aliens and your baby grows really quickly.
That's true.
And grows up really quickly. Yeah. There's a neat little kind of conceit that there's this great big alien ship that crashes and destroys itself, but then it kind of rebuilds itself. It has this ability to regenerate, which was quite nice. There's also a kind of an idea going on that actually this alien invasion is just one alien.
That's true. There's one alien running the whole ship.
Seems to be.
Yeah. And then he's just making his robotic minions
to do his will. I really like the film. About halfway through, it kind of changes pace and we find ourselves in the jungle. And there's a couple of sort of freedom fighter type people escaping through the jungle and they all kind of get involved in it all. We discover that the child's blood might be able to sort of help resolve the situation. There's lots and lots of fighting, lots and lots of biomechanical soldiers and robots and blue light and stuff going on. It's a film that almost never stops. As I said, I actually really enjoyed it. And certainly reading the reviews, it seems to have been better received than the original Skyline film, which is interesting.
Mm.
Have you seen this one, Josh?
Well, that's funny you should say that. Yeah, I own both films. I bought them both.
Mm-hmm.
I watched... I'm one of the people who actually didn't mind the first film that much.
I didn't mind it.
I liked
that much.
It. I liked it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it has a lot of haters, and I go, there's really nothing wrong with the first film.
Mm.
Here's the thing is, I bought the second film, and I did watch the first half, and then I got busy. And I thought, hey, this is quite good. I got to finish it. And then I never had the time to really get back to it. And now it's funny, you're telling me that the best half of it is the first half.
I preferred the first half. I thought it sort of lost focus a bit when we ended up in the jungle. And the guys were all running through the jungle. So
I didn't mind that.
Yeah. So I think I'd give it maybe seven out of ten or something. You know, it's not a bad film. It's very enjoyable. If you're looking for something to watch that's got a lot of action in, definitely worth looking
at. The effects are there. The effects are definitely there.
They are. They're brilliant.
And I think that's all we've got time for. Thanks so much to David J. Howe.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you to Joshua Lou Friedman.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Great to have you back, Josh. Patricia H. Ash, who can't reply, Robin Pierce, and, of course, our producer, Alex Levchuk. That's the Stone Tapes. We'll see you next month. That voice which calls to me and speaks my name. And do I dream again? For now I find a fountain of the opera is there inside my mind.
Seen your face, draw back in fear.